The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Our special Substack friends, welcome to the Real Pod Extra. Jane is sick today, so you've just got trusty old Alex and Duncan.
We've never done a bad one.
It's all going to be great. I've just hastily thrown together a document. We've just done a Remember When as well. The vibes are right. It's all happening. We're going to talk about Martin Scorsese and we're going to talk about My Kitchen Rules New Zealand. So obviously CTI is over for another year and TVNZ have provided us with another delicious platter of reality television to get into. So we'll be recapping.
Can I say one more thing about Celebrity Treasure Island, which kept bugging me over and over? This is a note. If you're a producer of the show or have any relationship to how it's made, you know I love this show. I think it's really important that you heed this. You are making a show which is like sports for significant proportions of its runtime. And the thing which is really important to understand about it in a sporting context is that a lot of these things are driven by duration. Like how long someone has been hanging somewhere is really material. Like has it been 5 minutes or 50 minutes? And every so often you'll flash up a bit of time, but there's no like rigor to it. Give us the time all the time. I always want to know, like, make it a bit more sports-like in terms of its presentation. Change nothing about the show, but just give us a bit more information. I swear to God, it will make the show stickier and better. That's my little sermon.
I love that. Two things. One thing I realised that annoyed me after the finale was that we didn't get the dig. So much of the thing about the finale is the doof of the spade on the, you know, on the wood of the chest. And having just like, you know, chains and a little puny lock we couldn't really hear or see. I mean, I'm sure there were reasons for that. I'm sure it was to do with the fact they did it maybe at the top of a mountain. but at a point, I want to see people digging, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I also found out, I don't think James said this on the podcast, but I heard from various people now that they shot that final sequence over 2 days.
What the what?
So they had gone back to their yurt or wherever overnight. They had to halt for light, and then they came back the next day and picked up with James. It was James's go, and he got it. I mean, I could be wrong here, but I've heard this from multiple people, including someone who was on the television show.
They do that in sports sometimes, you know, like I feel like it's happened in one day international cricket before. It's you know, like that's what you know, if you have to halt, like if the light becomes so low that it's dangerous to continue, sometimes you just got to call it in the interest of having a fair contest between these athletes.
So, yeah, that's just, and I'm kind of like, I mean, I guess you can't, they can't ruin the mystique of television by telling us that, but I don't know, it just kind of interests me.
I mean, I feel like they could have. I think it would have made it even more hectic, you know?
So that's the end of CTI. You didn't go to the viewing party, you didn't go to the
No,
big celebrations?
I had a clash. I didn't go to either the viewing party or the launch party, and I feel this great aching sadness in my soul. And that TVNZ just announced their new season launch, which is one of my favourite events of the year. And this tells you a lot about the parlous state of media at the moment. It's a breakfast. In fact, it's not even really a breakfast. It's like starts at 9:45 and ends at midday. So there's no drinks.
Continental?
I guess there'll be a little bit of snacks, but there's no obligation. That's a zone between two meals. I'm like, man, the budget. Because We saw, you and I went early on to the
right.
to the greatest launch event in history at the Civic.
Civic. And it was like Mike Hosking was in the rafters, like the Phantom of the Opera. We all had light up Coldplay bracelets.
A drum riser rose through the stage with someone doing like this heroic solo. It was, I swear to God, it had like Cirque du Soleil money spent on it.
That was one of the first times I went to like a thing of any kind, any event, any launch. And I was like, is this just what's been happening? Like, is this just what the world is and people are doing this all the time? As it turns out, no. It was very short-lived.
Not much longer.
So grateful to be there for the heyday. Hey, should we do some real news?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay, well, there's been a few big stories over the past week. I mean, the biggest one, which you've already done an emergency podcast, fantastic podcast about on The Fold, is the shock announcement that the project's being axed at the end of the year. I mean, I don't want you to monopod right now for 20 minutes, but...
I stand ready.
top line thoughts.
the thing that I didn't do on the podcast, which I sort of regret somewhat, is just talk about the content so much. I was very much about trying to analyze what it means in a media context, and if that's what you're up for, go check it out. But but I do think that the project was like a really great product. Like the goofiness, that, you know, the project quite regularly, you know, we'd publish a story and they might do a version of it for TV, or we'd, you know, sometimes collaborate on it. Jose Barbosa, beloved longtime spin-off staffer, is now at the project. I feel like there are bonds and just general kind of vibe connections between mm-hmm. us and the project. And it's a sadness. How are you feeling about it all?
I mean, I was
you're a fan, right?
Extremely shocked, especially because we just had cum boxes. You know, I thought that would have bought them at least 2 years in terms of like cut through. I don't know how economics works, but I thought that was massive. Something that I sort of thought about is also, you know, like 24, 25 people work there. It's also become this strange like vehicle, maybe surprising vehicle for like a lot of comedians. You know, like there's that fourth guest slot every night. So there's lots of like regular comedians that show up, also comedian guests, and also a lot of comedians write for and work on that show. And that's something else to kind of think about. Like 7 Days has been slashed massively. We don't have Jono and Ben and Funny Girls in that same capacity. Like I was just thinking a little bit about maybe the impact that would have on, you know, some of the people in the comedy community as well who have spent a lot of time on that show.
It's a great point. And, you know, it's certainly for most of its run was overseen by John Bridges, comedian, and which is, I think, why it has that sensibility and why he's been very comfortable hiring people who work in that sort of news comedy nexus, and that's obviously also helped inform shows like, you know, Paddy Gower has issues. I think it, yeah, it's you're right. It's a big industrial loss, and it's a loss as a like a very specific product unto itself.
I've been working on a thing looking back at like the history of our 7 PM shows, and Stuart Soman-Lund brought up in the editorial meeting today something which I had clean forgotten about, which was Story. Do you remember
Story? Yeah, I talked about Story on my podcast. I think
didn't get the whole way through, to be
honest. No, look, that's fair play. Well, I think Story points to why they bought the project in the first place, because Story was, in many ways, like a hybrid of Campbell Live and the project. You know, it was shorter, it was punchier, it had a bit more of a tonal range than a Campbell Live. It was Duncan Garner and Heather Duplessis Allen. It should have worked, but there's something in, like, you know, we obviously talk a lot on this show about various international formats, which they make New Zealand versions of, which you typically see in the reality TV space, but Project's an example as well. And, you know, there's a reason why those things kind of carry you along, or if they're not there, if you just try and make them from scratch to make it sort of like that, they can often lose you. And that was actually the case with 7 Sharp in the early days. Remember, that was, it took a long while to figure out exactly what it was. It started with actually Jesse Mulligan on it, and it just didn't crackle the right way.
It's crazy that 7 Sharp has had like three, we're on 7 Sharp 3.0 now. Like, we have that initial panel, then we had Hosking and Tony, and now we have it's just, I don't know, I just feel like the 7pm shows, people don't really think about them until they're gone, and then you look back and see what they kind of represented from our time. Do you have any, did you get any further goss about what might be coming or what might be replacing it since
the podcast? I had a little exchange with someone at 3 about, you know, because again on my podcast, which you probably didn't get up to, I conjectured that the reference to Paddy Gow might actually be, like, if you could get him to do a 7pm show, that feels like that's probably their best option in terms of the sort of star power and the has the internet kind of, would make for great digital stuff. So, and the person didn't sort of outright deny that. So I feel like that maybe suggests that could be something that they're working on. It'd be sort of weird if they weren't, in a way. But again, that, you know, whether they can get that across the line and what that means for everyone who's not Paddy Gow, which is the current 24 people on the project, it's all pretty, it's just a bummer, you know.
Got another idea. Come down with me, NZ.
That is actually one of the great tragedies of the Save Campbell Live era. Like, you know, obviously it was sad that they dropped Campbell Live, but
New Zealand was not ready for Come Dine With Me, New Zealand. This is what I was thinking. I mean, we'll talk about My Kitchen real soon. But sitting down to watch a cooking show where there's all little, like, dopey, dorky New Zealanders together at a table got me thinking hard about Come Dine With Me and what an incredible undertaking it was. Like, they made so many episodes of that. It was so outrageously funny. The casting was so good. And it was just, like, wrong time, you know, like, just the wrong
it's interesting to think of whether it was the wrong time, because if it wasn't that emotions were so hot out the back of it, could it have worked? You know, that's the thing I wonder about. Like, because you get hooked into a week, I think there's easily enough New Zealanders that you could run it forever, I would have thought. And it looks like it's pretty cheap to make.
Mm, yeah.
And it launched with such immense animus. Because there was that brief period, I think, it didn't launch straight after Save Campbell Live. There was like a month of repeats of
like motorway patrols?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was narrated by Jono and Ben, and then they were like, and now Come Dine With Me, and it just got absolutely slaughtered. I think even Guy Williams, who narrated it, got some blowback for it. Mm-hmm. But
just got me thinking. I don't know, I just feel like, imagine now, like, the little TikTok clips you could get, it would just be different, you know. I just think we've had Gogglebox and things like that. I don't know, maybe the cultural cringe would just mean people just couldn't handle it 5 nights a week watching New Zealand dorks. Other real news. Oh, two things quickly. If you haven't read the amazing Stuff investigation into Noel Edmonds' war in his little small town, please go and read it. I mean, I don't know much about Noel Edmonds. I understand Mr. Blobby to some extent.
I didn't, but I'm very aware of the context. Nikki was basically live recapping them, howling as she was reading them. So I almost feel like I got them spoiled for me. But I grew up not watching Noel Edmonds. That's why, like, buzzes me out. This guy was, like, one of the biggest stars in England when I was growing up. Like, so famous.
Mm.
Like, Noel's house party was, I don't even know how to explain it. It was just this glue that held the country together. Like, everyone was on that show. It was really chaotic. It was such a cool concept. And now he seems to have come to New Zealand and become, like, a giant turd. Maybe he's probably a giant turd the whole time. But it's just really, really funny to me. Because I don't think we, as a country, understand how famous he is. Like, which,
no.
And the more famous he is, the funnier what he's doing is, you know? So it all just works.
There's a great quote from a local, which Matt also read out at the editorial meeting today. You can tell I did a lot of preparation for this pod, where a local says, no offence to his fame or something, but I don't give a shit about this guy. I just think no offence to his fame is really...
that's us.
...is really, really beautiful. Just one more news story that I love from over the weekend. Toni Street had her 40th birthday party. Huge congratulations to her. And Jason Reeves, it was 90s themed. And her co-star Jason Reeve rocked up dressed as the Mask, and I just highly recommend you check it out.
Well, no, but he originally came dressed as the Mask And not in green face.
So that interesting detail. Showed up in the mask. No one recognised him. And then another person dressed as the mask showed up who had the green face paint, took Reeves to the bathroom, greened him up. Two masks.
Everyone went so hard on the Cosies. I love it when the celebrities hang out together. Like when you see like a group of normal people with like a couple of celebrities amongst them, I don't care for it. But when they're all together and there's no normal people, brilliant. That's how it should be.
It's a beautiful thing. Laura McGoldrick, fantastic. Julia Roberts, a Pretty Woman costume. Just, yeah, it reminded me again of Mike Hosking at some function, the Cobb & Co. It might have been Tony Street's 30th, actually. Cobb & Co. themed birthday, and there's that fantastic photo of Mike Hosking looking miserable, holding a Pink Panther drink with a little Cobb & Co. crown on.
Miserable is too positive. Like, that is the saddest photo. There's three really sad photos in New Zealand history. There's David Cunliffe on a log after the 2014 election. There's Shane Jones on a stage, drink about a case of red wine, and he's very sad after the 2020 election. And there's Mike Hosking at Cobb & Co. And he might be the saddest of them all.
Oh, dear. Okay, that's the news. Should we get into reality check?
We probably have to eventually.
I am disgusted at how much you have copied my husband.
Reality check.
That sounded like remastered. Like it was like the 40th anniversary edition.
Paul's version.
They've gone back into the studio. Yeah, Paul's version.
I have done just like a little bit of remixing of
Oh my God. The levels just felt really different.
To make them a little more balanced.
Oh.
I heard it.
Tangerine vinyl. I got 1989, by the way. This is not, we're on a tangent again, but I got the tangerine double vinyl.
I already have it on vinyl, the old, like,
so
Scooter Braun's version.
Yeah, I've got Scooter Braun too.
Didn't hold you back?
Nothing holds me back. I love to buy a vinyl and then never touch it. Just put it straight in the cupboard. Okay, My Kitchen Rules New Zealand, back for a...
Fifth season. Someone's done his research.
With a much leaner cast and a brand new judge who I am obsessed with, Colin Fastenage.
Is he a brand new judge?
He's new for New Zealand.
I mean, I saw him, maybe he was here last year to launch this season, but
He was.
Well, I saw him at the TVNZ launch a year ago. And everything about the launch was very slick and professional. You know how it goes. And then him and Minot were just like having a time. They were off script and off message.
It was Irish Craig. It was a lot of jokes about wives and stuff like that.
It was like it was 2006. It was really, really, and it was refreshing. It wasn't in a bad way. I think there were some bad things, but it was like fine.
You can tell that he's trying to keep it together, I think, on the show. But then there's little flourishes sometimes. And also just that little earring at the top of his ear is that's the energy. That's the energy coming out right there.
So much.
We've got five teams. Because I remember My Kitchen Rules was the first reality show we ever covered with any consistency on the spinoff where no one was watching. And it was purely a volume exercise at that time because there was four episodes a week and we needed to fill the website. So in many ways, I have My Kitchen Rules to thank for a lot of my, early training in writing. But now it's down to two nights a week, but as you learned, feature length, They're not mucking around.
They are really, really long episodes, but it doesn't drag. I don't know. It's a very cozy show. I did not expect to enjoy it as much as I did.
So the first episode we had Tauranga Besties, Nada and Pops. Great duo to start with. This is who I want to see on TV all the time.
New Zealand. It is. And honestly, the whole cast is pretty that.
Yeah. It's a really good mix.
Shall we run through the cast first?
Yeah, let's do that. Quickly. So there's Nada and Pops, who are the besties, sisters from another mister. We love them. God, we love them. Who's next? Vicky? Was it Vicky or Nikki and Pascal?
Vicky and Pascal are from the Hawke's Bay, and Pascal is cast to be the villain, and at one point in the second episode, you know, that he gets, they really get into him. I'm a fan. Like, we need this man on this show. Quite often, the problem with New Zealand reality shows is there is no Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just need to respect how necessary they are to, for the TV to be made. We've got Matt and Kurt, who star in the second episode, also besties from Northland.
That's right. Anya and Emily, the besties. That's a lot of besties.
They're all besties. They're not all. And they're coming next week. They're like Russian and maybe Korean?
French. French and Russian. So everyone's looking for an exciting mix of flavours there. And also a very intriguing pair, Julie and Matthew. We're obviously mother and son. They said about 4,000 times.
Because the thing is, it's not that obvious. Not like, obvious. She looks young and he doesn't look that young. They look as close in age as Vicky and Pascal, let's put it that way. But I also love them. Matthew in particular, he just really likes food. Like, he's just so excited and hungry and just a fantastic character.
And I feel like you can kind of see moments where he's not like a Pascal sympathizer, but he's like getting close, you know, like I think he respects Pascal.
Well, at the very least, him and Pascal rate the shit out of their own cooking.
Yeah.
And so the makers of this show, the previous format they came up with was My Restaurant Rules, which we have also reviewed on this podcast and adored.
Another great show.
Such a great show. And they're really not all that different format-wise. But My Restaurant Rules is almost like the pro version of My Kitchen Rules. But the dynamic I loved in that show was that often it would be like a mum and their son, and the son was the chef, and they would just be like the son. Just once they're in the kitchen together, like they can be quite nice often when they're eating, but in the kitchen, forget about it. It's really, really tense.
Yeah.
And there's a few, like I think Vicky and Pascal and Julie and Matthew, we've got a lot of potential for tension to come out in that respect.
There's bits where Julia was just telling Matthew off like instantly in like the kind of super tease, I think, even. And we saw Vicky, when Pascal was doing one of his big Pascal criticisms, she said that she was Charlie horsing him under the table to try and get him to shut up. And I was like, that's your husband.
Well, but there's two things, right? One is like my understanding of a Charlie horse is that it's a knee to the side of the leg. So I don't think she was doing it. I think she was doing horse bites, which are a wholly different childhood assault.
That's actually interesting because I was raised with horse bites being that, but Joe says that that's a Charlie horse.
What the hell,
so
Joe?
So maybe it's like a regional
dialect.
Thing. Yeah, like crib and batch. God, there's so many good story ideas coming out of this podcast.
These are all copyright.
Yeah. Because another story idea I was thinking of is, so My Kitchen Rules NZ, $100,000 prize. Do you think this is the reality show that requires the least effort to get to the $100,000? Like, wouldn't it be the easiest for a novice going from a standing start to win My Kitchen Rules NZ over any other show?
I disagree. Like cooking is really, really hard. But I do think if you're a really good cook, you just have to cook a couple times.
Let's say you treated it like, okay, if I win, this is like, you know, this is my work for the year, maybe two, maybe three.
I'm not going to get on board with this idea.
Like, and you just dedicate, you do the Ottolenghi stuff, you do some courses, you train for My Kitchen Rules.
What do you think everyone else has been doing? They're all really good.
No, but they've all got other jobs. I'm saying you make this your full-time job to prepare for MKR. But versus, in this experiment versus X Factor versus Celebrity Treasure Island, you've got to work on being a celebrity first before you can even get on the show. Yeah, you know, that's a long game. That's at least a few years. The Block, forget about it. Not in this climate and not from nothing.
I think like house rules. Like, for example, I'm surprised that more like proper chefs don't sort of change their name and just go on this and just smash, or like a really hardcore chippy go on House Rules or The Block and just clean up. You know, like I feel like that's just waiting to happen, that opportunity, or maybe it does happen. We just don't know.
But in terms of the hours you'd have to put in, like the The instant restaurant itself, stressful, but that's just a night. That's a shoot day. You know, and then you've got, if you make it through there, I guess you have to go to everyone else's.
You just have to be really good at cooking. I feel like you're underrating how hard it is to be really good at cooking.
No, but it's not like magic. Like, you can learn it. That's what I mean. It's like some people cannot sing, right? And you could never learn how to sing. If you dedicated the time and energy to it, can you learn how to cook really well?
But you're implying that everyone else isn't doing that every weekend and every night. Like, these are really serious people.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you didn't have any of that, I'm saying if you're me, right? Maybe I'm just like excited because after watching MKRNZ, I made gnocchi for the first time from scratch and it worked out beautifully and I was like blown away. Where is my 100K,
please? Would you
have
been like perfect 10?
I mean, my mum said it was a perfect 10, but she eats like warm yogurt for... for Christmas dinner, so who's to say? Anyway, I think I'm on the right side of history here.
I'm sure you're wrong.
I think for a normal person of all the reality shows, what do you think is easier to win?
I think like The Bachelor is easier to win.
But you don't get, I'm talking about the month, like in terms of getting 100 grand.
Oh,
because so the prize, like you know what I mean?
Well, Super Trish Run, you don't get the prize, some annoying charity does.
True.
I think The Block is easier.
Wow.
Because I think that those basic skills are more acquirable versus the like level of execution you need to win My Kitchen Rules. I agree. If you already have those skills, which a lot of people do, a lot of like really outstanding amateur chefs, not you, but like other ones in New Zealand. And I think that they, you know, if they went on a 6 month like immersion and then lit a few, because they get to choose the dishes, it's not like they're surprised. If they went really hard and learned a few like dishes to just like crazy levels of execution, like it's weird to me that that some of the like mistakes they made given that they got to choose what they were making. But so that's my choice. Anyway, like
let's get into the extra.
So we'll do a whole podcast on this. Is this what we're doing for the rest of the podcast? Doing. Just staying on this, hung up on this point forever. I is gonna be packing down the studio.
But you don't understand.
Were we doing a megapod?
Okay, Nada and Pops, Tauranga. What a beautiful, massive house. This is the first thing I wrote down.
This is the richest thing I've ever seen.
What is this house?
And they just act like it's normal. It's like an estate.
Huge
there are horses.
Kitchen, the horses, the outdoor dining. It just like, I wonder if that's why they got chosen first. I don't know. But I was like, is this their house? You know?
Well, so I looked into this as well. I'm shocking myself with the amount of research and the amount of information I had to hand. So apparently it's very rarely is it someone's actual house. Much more often it's a friend's house or a holiday home or something. And I think in the second episode, you know, they open the fridge and it's completely empty and looks brand new. And that the whole location of Blend, Kurt and... is it Matt? Kurt and Matt's restaurant feels very brand new. Whereas this does feel like it's someone's house. So either one of them is mega rich. God, imagine that's their batch. Like that is one of the flashiest houses I've ever seen in New Zealand.
Massive. Like it looks like where they shot Bake Off. I don't know. And they've got a pretty fancy menu to match. You know, it's all about a journey from, you know, through land and sea in New Zealand. And the starter was, I mean, a cacophony of seafood. It was just
It almost felt a little bit like a buffet where you just kind of grab it. I think it felt like too much. What was it? It was like a prawn, a mussel.
A prawn, smoky mussels, creamy kenna, a little salmon tartar thing wrapped in a, what's it?
An oyster. An oyster?
Yeah. It was a lot. It was a lot of seafood. And the judges, I mean, do we want to go dish by dish? How are we supposed to do this? The judges were gaga for the mussels.
Yeah.
As was everyone at the table. And I think Colin said that it was a his first SBJ, a.k.a. Sweet Baby Jesus.
Colin is really great. I mean, he's a huge part of the attraction of the show.
Yeah. I also love, I forgot, because I haven't watched MKR for a few seasons, how good it is that the judges get served first and they just have to eat and stay like stone cold Steve Austin, not give anything away while everyone else is just sitting there like looking at their dinner.
It's so chilling. And there's no reason for it really. And then it's not like it resolves into anything. It's just like, it's almost like their food taste is ahead of the king. And it's like, very well. It's just a great bit.
But it's almost like, yeah, they should get, who's lower ranking? It's the guests, right? If you were checking for poison.
100%. The guests have got basically 5 points to dish out each. The judges have got 30. It's six times the power of these lowly guests.
I mean, that, God, the scores, that's fractions, isn't it? I was thinking about that. I was like, how the hell do they figure that out?
That's impossible. It's just a vibe. It's just a vibe. Let's bang on through the courses and then talk about the scoring. Maybe.
Okay. So they had the seafood, you know, all of the seafood, and then the main was a big old steak, wasn't it? I mean, this is not how they're framing it. It's like a beautiful aged whatever. But I wrote down a big old steak.
It was a big old steak, and they had to cook. They made it hard on themselves by cooking 10 steaks rather than one big bit of meat and cutting it up into pieces, and then. There was like some kumara, a shroom, and that was maybe a bit of jus.
A bit of jus.
Jus was a bit loose.
was it loose?
How it was described.
I missed that.
It was like a loose still.
And then dessert, they did looked like a beautiful steamed pud.
Yeah, there were rave reviews. It didn't look that great to me, but the way that they the way that it was reviewed made it sound like the loveliest sponge. But the crème anglaise,
it's not good to me. As we learned, you know, you overcook it turns to scrambled eggs. It looked like it was splitting on the plate. My mum and I were playing Scrabble while we were watching MKR, and she. I went out of the room and she said, come back, the dessert has gone to hell. And then she didn't play for about 10 minutes because she said, I'm lamenting the anglaise. So my mum got real into it real fast. It's amazing how quickly you get invested in what is just like, liquids.
Yeah, it is. It is liquids.
Pascal did not like the dessert.
No, Pascal is good because he's like, when it's, some of these guys are just like picking that type can just be slashing holes in everything. But he's basically, you know, if something's great, he's awestruck. If it's bad, he just rips it. You know, that was basically my posture as a critic. So I got no issue with that, but people do.
I mean, I took umbrage with the way that, this might not have been in the first episode, but the collar versus waistcoat ongoing issue. It was all tucked under.
Yeah,
the shirt was all tucked under, and then it was just like the waistcoat V. I was like, I thought you were a designer.
Yeah, that was problematic.
They got 70 out of 100.
Yeah, and everyone scored them pretty fair. I think they got 3 sevens and an 8 from memory, and then the judges basically like a whole bunch of sevens. It's a real... The show has got huge 7 energy. It's probably realistically a 7 out of 10 show.
Yeah.
And everyone is just quite nice.
Yeah.
So there's the fact that the first episode netted out to 7 out of 10 across the board is appropriate. Next episode we head to Mangawhai and it is hosing down. It's flooding.
I know. Like, I wonder when this was shot. Outside their house. And there was a surfboard next to it.
Yeah, they asked Manu if he'd ever been asked to do a Manu, and he was like pointed at the puddle and thought maybe. I just think that'll be a great bit sometime, is to really go for it into a puddle. You know, I feel like that, you get some views on that.
Is this Manu or just anyone?
Well, it'd be extremely good if it was Manu.
Yeah.
But anyone could probably pull it off. I doubt he'd do it. I think he's.
I think Manu is more fun than you reckon. Like in that, there's a great interview that Samuel, our producer, did with the pair, which is
on really good.
Substack, which you would all know about.
I have read that. Did you do an edit job on that, Alex? I heard.
I did work a little bit with him on it. Yeah, but
very,
look, it was
very
all there.
Good job.
It was
great
all
format.
There. Yeah. They both love McDonald's. And they revealed their orders, and I thought
the orders
they
were insane. Well, one of them, like, it's a 20-pack of
nuggets. 20 nuggets, yeah. I think that might have been Manu. That's what I mean. Manu is crazy. Like, 20 nuggets and a, hold on, let me just control F nuggets. Manu gets a quarter pounder and 20 chicken nuggets, and Colin orders a quarter pounder and a Big Mac, which I actually kind of love because I would rather a double burger than a chip. I'm gone off chips.
Yeah, same. Same. A quarter pounder and a cheeseburger, outstanding order. 20 nuggets and a quarter pounder. I think you might have a protein overdose on your hands.
Yeah.
Like, that is so much chuck. I mean, they're right about the shrinkflation that McDonald's has not been immune to, like everyone else. But still, that's a lot. I think Colin's order is defensible. Like,
yeah,
that's a totally fine amount of food. You'll be full afterwards, but
yeah, but I mean, Big Mac and a quarter pounder. That's the like ripe end of ordering two burgers. That's like the most you can probably do, right?
Unless
you got one of those like granddaddy four patty Macs. But I just love that chefs, like these fancy chefs, you know, they love takeaways.
Yeah.
I remember I interviewed, back when it was Pete Evans and Bono, I interviewed them and brought them our like worst meals ever, like our most grotty, disgusting, shameful cooks. And I remember even back then, Manu saying that he just like, you know, because chefs, they're so tired, they just eat like grilled cheese at the end of the day or burgers.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a bit more into my concept than Pete Evans was at the time. I remember it being quite uncomfortable, but. Oh, dear. Matt and Kurt, okay. Tartare, high stakes. A French dessert to a French chef, and you've got a French contestant sitting alongside you.
Well, and also you're starting off with a bisque, which is a famously difficult French soup.
I became obsessed with this dish. I feel like I do not know what a bisque is, but after their reactions to it, I was just like, if there was a way that you could be watching MKR and getting a little delivery, you know, of what they were eating on screen, I would like that very much.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Or maybe it's a... Yeah, no, it doesn't really work. Because you do want to be watching it and eating it. You don't want, like, attending it wouldn't be as good. Like, if there was, like, a sort of a rat's table where sort of super fans could pay crazy amounts to sort of also dine at Blend.
Yeah.
that's their restaurant, by the way, to signify the great blend of different cultures that is Aotearoa.
That's everyone's, like, subheading, for their restaurant.
It really is. It really is. But the that bisque, like, it got perfect 10s from the judges. Everyone was wowed by it. That feels like it'll take some topping for dish of the season.
Mm. The scampi ravioli and a bisque. Oh.
Yeah.
All good words. Only one of them I sort of understand, which is ravioli.
But it also felt like it was their masterpiece and they became so obsessed with it that they were sort of, the rest of the meal was a bit of not an afterthought, but they were sort of behind and, you know, like, I thought, yeah, just what, nothing was had the level of craft in it that bisque did, sadly.
Yeah, they did big old venison chunks, probably called something better again for the main, which had two sauces with it, which was controversial at the table.
Yeah, and like a potato gratin, twice baked. They did a lot of doubling up, and then some seasonal vegetables, which did look a bit sort of afterthoughty.
Yeah, Pascal said that it was bitterly disappointing and insipid.
Yeah, so Pascal basically lit into them. I think he might have used the word disgusting, but he did take care when pressed on it to point out that this was. Effectively, this was about the expectations created by the perfection of the first dish, of the entree. And I think that's fair enough. And the whole table got into him. It was, I thought, excessive. And I do worry that the fact that they all sort of got amongst him for his choices of words means that he might go back into his shell a little bit, even though he doesn't seem like that kind of a guy. And we might get a less good TV show as a result. And I don't want that.
I was surprised to see everyone pipe up. It's so early in the season, you know, like, it's not the New Zealand way. We swallow that. We do not confront.
Yeah. That's something we talk about back in the hotel room in loud whispers.
Yeah, but they obviously, I mean, it looks like they're saving Pascal and Vicky till the end while he sort of you know, throw shade at everybody. And he did this long sort of diatribe just when he had seen the menu about what he thought about the simplicity of it and stuff. And even you could see Manu kind of like raising his eyebrows a bit, wiping nuggets off his, you know, the side of his mouth.
Well, the tart tatin, the Matt and Kurt were talking about how difficult it was. And then Pascal and actually Matthew too were just like, nah, piece of piss, mate. Mm. And Manu was like, no, this is a really difficult dish. And they were sort of like still sticking to it. I'm like, look, mate, if Manu is telling you it's difficult, then it's difficult. And maybe you're just making something else and just stoked with it in this like real Kiwi way. But just come on, sons.
That's like, right. He was like, yeah, he's like, my mum taught me how to make this. I'm like probably at the age of two, you know, when he started his culinary career. They still got, they got 10s for the entree. That's a pretty early 10. That was very exciting. And then the rest kind of was a bit middling, wasn't it? It was sevens and...
It was 3 sevens and a six from Nada and Pops, which I think is interesting because they were the most full-throated in terms of critiquing Pascal for his choice of words, and then they gave the lowest score to Matt and Kurt, which that didn't really seem warranted based on either their views or anyone else's that it would go down to a six. And it's interesting that if you look at the judges' scores, now obviously that was helped by the 10, but the judges' scores, the contestant scores were two below what Nada and Pops got, but after the judges' scores, they were two above. So there was a 4-point swing there. So, I think that the judges were impressed at aspects of it, but saw that there were issues to come. But Nada and Pops quite enjoyed the fact that they were sort of, on the one hand, very vigorous defenders, but on the other hand, six.
Yeah. I mean, it is confusing. There's so many numbers to throw around. It's like, how does anyone keep track of anything? They came away with 72. So we had a 72 and a 70.
Yeah. Again, I'm sure that by the end of this, we will absolutely net out a bang on 70 average for everyone total.
A ripper start. So we've got two more next week. I forget how My Kitchen Rules works. We have the instant restaurants and then they all go to like a HQ of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, you forget how it works because they change it every season, but I think that's how it's working. I think that maybe the bottom-ranked team is going to drop off, but it could. I mean, we don't have a lot of time. They want to be running this thing in December, so it's entirely possible that we'll go to, like, a grand final after the end of the instant restaurants.
Well, we will be here for every step of the way, every bisque. Every tartan. I'm excited. You're right, it does have a comfortable, cozy feeling to it. And you know that it's like, it's still pretty low stakes. You know, no one's going to get really, really hurt. Well, you know, Pascal's collar might be tucked under his waistcoat for a while and that's about as bad as stuff is going to get.
Yeah. It's definitely like, and it's more stressful right now. So you watch a show like this and it sort of feels like it centers you somewhere kind of really kind of sweet and basic.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're at the end. Do you think we've done a podcast?
I think we have. I think we've done two podcasts and this is the second one.
Pretty amazing. And if you have made it here, thank you. Thank you kindly. This was about a 70 out of 100.
I don't disagree. No,
I'm just going to go away and work on my theory and try and explain it better next week. Okay? I'm going to spend a week thinking about it.
That can be like a new segment for us, as you just trying to convince me of this like really narrow theory and me still
I mean like if you want to make $100,000.
I know.
No, but do you actually understand?
But I don't understand because you're acting like everyone else can't cook.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying if you were someone who you're like, oh, fade us out, I hear this.
No, no. No. Let's keep arguing.
You wanted to make $100,000.
Bring the music up while we keep arguing.
You're like, I need $100,000. No. I don't have a GoFundMe. All I have is this like swag bag of reality shows. Which one can I work on
but
to
I
win
think you're,
the
I
cash?
Think you're wrong because you're assuming that the competition doesn't have any ability to kind of influence this. Like, they're cooking too.
No, but I'm saying, what would you have the best shot at?
Oh, I think it's the block. I still think it's the block. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.